Hey guys, what's up? It's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay, host of Higher Learning, one of the hosts of Higher Learning, and I want to tell you guys about one of my favorite shows on our network. I'm not biased or anything. It really is one of my favorite shows, and it is The Ringerverse. Head into The Ringerverse to stay up to date with all things superheroes and nerd culture entertainment. This week, they have covered Venom, Let There Be Carnage. And if you're like me, and you didn't grow up knowing things about the MCU and comic books, but you want to learn, you have a desire, you can find it all on The Ringerverse podcast. Go to Ringerverse on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yo, 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 Thought Warriors. What is up? Higher Learning is on. It's I, Van Lathan Jr.
And it's me, Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
Playing hurt. Rachel's playing hurt.
Well, I am.
You have a sickness? You have a specific sickness?
I don't know what it is. Like, I cannot adjust to whatever is in the air. Now I'm taking, remember I was real sick back in August. Mm-hmm. Turns out, I found the source of it though. Because a friend I was around came back to LA and was like, were you sick with this? And I was like, yes. Mm-hmm. I think that's where I got it. It was upper respiratory infection, apparently. Mm-hmm. This, the turning bronchitis, this, I'm congested. My throat hurts. My ears hurt.
Your ears.
But my nose is also running. You can hear it in my voice.
Yeah.
I'm struggling.
So what are you doing? Are you like, what are we doing? Tussin? Hot toddy? Like what are you
Ooh,
taking?
A hot toddy. That's what I should
hot
be
toddy's
doing.
Hot toddy good. That's what you should be doing.
No, like it started Saturday, but I had to work all weekend. You know, what's new?
Running yourself down. You're not getting enough rest, right?
That's what my mom would say.
Yeah,
honestly.
Running yourself down. You got to get rest. I rested this weekend. I watched The Many Saints of Newark.
I tried last night. I fell asleep.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, it's Tony Soprano movie. You shouldn't watch it.
I should not?
Not till you're finished with the series.
I'm done.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, you can't.
We haven't even talked about it. I thought it was... Okay, so you know how everyone says the show was like one of the best shows ever? That, no. But I will tell you, it is the ending is the best last 5 minutes of TV I've ever seen.
See, that's so interesting because most people, if they have a nit to pick with The Sopranos, the nit is at the end. So you don't think it's one of the best shows you ever seen? What is the best show you've ever seen? What's the best TV show ever to you?
It's a tie for me between The Wire and Breaking Bad.
Oh, okay. Well, then those are normally the three when people are putting them up. Yeah. Like it's normally The Wire or Breaking Bad or The Sopranos. I think The Wire is the greatest. I think I've said this before. The Wire is the greatest show ever made. Sopranos is the most entertaining show. It's the best show.
See, I definitely didn't. I got bored at times. But wait, what did you think about the ending? I was obsessed.
Of The Sopranos?
It.
It's fine. Like, I thought that the writers had put themselves into a very unenviable position. It was like between a rock and a hard place. What was going to happen to Tony? If you let Tony live and you show Tony living, then...
Spoiler alert.
Spoiler alert for The Sopranos.
Sorry, it would have been one for me, so I feel for those
spoiler
people.
Spoiler alert for The Sopranos, okay? If you'd have let Tony live and blatantly show Tony living, like he lives, then you almost are complicit in all the things that he did. Like, oh, look at this. But then if you kill him, at that point, we still had James Gandolfini with us. So then you don't have the opportunity to do any Sopranos movies. The story ends there, right? Mm-hmm. So by doing what they did, they almost let the audience make the decision for themselves whether or not Tony Soprano killed. I think it's pretty obvious that Tony got killed.
Absolutely.
But you know, now, certainly since God rest his soul, we lost James Gandolfini. That was the last time we ever saw Tony Soprano. So, well, second to last, because now we're seeing him again with The Mean Saints of Newark. So,
well,
I think
because of the way I saw it, if I had watched it in the moment and I was watching it week by week and that's mm-hmm. how it ended, I probably would have been frustrated. But because I took my time watching the series and what I'm watching it 13, 14 years later, then it was a little different for me. But I thought it was genius.
Yeah.
I went like down a dark hole, reading everything, how they led up to that moment happening throughout mm-hmm. all six seasons, specifically the last one. To me, it was a little poetic.
A little poetic, huh? Hey, hey, the piece of dough. You know what I'm saying? That's probably, look, I'm sorry. You're going to get mad. I'm sorry, guys. Don't get mad. how they talk on The Sopranos. I'm not trying to be a bad guy. I just read something, and it's not on the rundown, but I just want to get your thoughts on it real quick. R. Kelly is threatening to rat on people. He's going to expose somebody. R. Kelly says he's not going down alone. He says,
you know what?
He said, R. Kelly says he's not going down alone. He said, hold on, I got it right here. He said, R. Kelly said he is going to, and there's a rapper and a big singer that were doing the same type of shit he was doing. He's not going down alone. I would never, ever want to speculate on who these people might be,
but
I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. I have some thoughts, but I'm not going to do it. What the fuck? How do you think that R. Kelly's, you think that he's going to uncover, is R. Kelly going to be the guy who uncovers this mystical world of Hollywood pedophilia that we've always been told exists?
I'm actually shocked he didn't try this before. Because you know how you see people say, oh, you want me? I'm not the big dog. I can give you this person, and this person. Mm-hmm. And you can really take down a whole ring of this. But that just shows how delusional he was, how long he had gotten away with things, and he thought he was untouchable, and he really would have been found not guilty. Now that reality has set in for him, and he knows he's going to jail for a very, very long time, if ever comes out, now he's like, well, I'm not going to sit here alone. It's so selfish. It's so archaic. I mean, I say that, don't get mad at me when I say, y'all, that it's selfish. Obviously, it's wrong what these people have done, and they should absolutely be held accountable and responsible. And if they are doing things even remotely close to what R. Kelly was doing, then they should be jailed and punished and suffer the consequences. But it's so R. Kelly to be like, we are like, I'm taking everybody down.
Let me ask you this.
Selfish.
If R. Kelly were to name a name and it was a big star. Mm-hmm. Would you believe him?
Yes.
Interesting.
He's got nothing to lose. Huh. What does he gain from lying about it?
Well, I don't know. But he doesn't strike me as the most credible guy in the world. I'm wondering, even if R. Kelly drops some huge name, if he would be believed. I would have trouble believing him.
What makes him not credible in this instance to you?
Just because it seems like it's being done out of spite.
But it is being done. No, it 100% is being done out of spite. He could have given these names up before if he was really concerned about justice. This isn't about justice. This isn't about getting a predator off the streets. This is about him being spiteful. Mm-hmm. So it is that, but that doesn't make him not credible. I really think he thought he was going to get off. And now that he's not, he's like, well, you know what? I'm not the only one who did this. I'm taking everybody down. And I think he's a narcissist in the sense that he wants to still continue to be in the spotlight. He doesn't want to go to jail and disappear. Well, now everyone's like, who are Kelly? Who is it? Now he's going to get another audience to talk about all this again.
So interesting. It's not necessarily that I think that he would be lying. He could very well be telling the truth. It's just at this point, like, why would we believe anything that he has to say? With all the lies that he's told, because it doesn't matter who he gave up, he was the big fish. So there's nobody that R. Kelly could have been like, you know, this person's also doing this too, that would have got the government off his back. All right, we got a lot of topics, so we're going to take a break and come back with him.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear, especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA, I make calls, I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it, you can work out in it, you can go outside, you can go shopping down in your local wherever, and you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons. This episode is brought to you by Atlassian. Atlassian software like Jira, Confluence, and Trello help power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone. because individually we're great, but together we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more.
All right. Do you want to split America down the middle?
Sure.
You're into that? A new poll from the Center for Politics at the University of Virginia reveals that over half of Trump voters and 41% of Biden voters are in favor of blue and or red states seceding from the union. Where does Rachel Lindsay stand?
I mean, can you imagine the mess that would happen if states actually started seceding from the nation? I mean, I joke about Texas needing to go, and maybe they do, but I'm sorry, is the poll all blue states and all red states, or just some states, or what's happening? Are we just split as a country where the blues secede and the red stay, or vice versa?
Yes. So it would be basically along the lines of essentially that Civil War, our favor of blue and or red states seceding from the union. That's a significant number of both Trump and Biden voters. 41% of Biden people think that the president's agenda shouldn't be encumbered by people who are being purposefully obstructionist in him trying to get his shit done. And it'd be easier if we didn't have to worry about them.
Well, obviously, yes. I mean, things aren't getting done because we're so divided when it comes to Congress. But the thing is, with this poll, you're either making people red or blue. And you're not considering the fact that there are a lot of people who are moderate, or there are a lot of people who don't identify with a certain party. And so where do those people go? You know, do you jump blue? Do you jump red? Like, I mean, this.
Well,
this
the poll didn't ask that. The poll just asked, it asked Trump voters and Biden voters whether or not they wanted to leave the union. Right. Mm-hmm. And so people that voted for Biden, 41% of them want to. People that voted for Trump, 51% of them want to. The independents, if that were a thing, I mean, just like any other place in America, any other time in American history, they would have a choice about where they lived. So, like, if you're an independent and you live in Louisiana now, but you don't want to live in the new Confederate States of the Union, you could easily, you know, I'm sure you could move to California or some other place like that. The central point is, we're this fractured as a nation to where a high percentage, or a significant percentage, should I say, of both voting blocks want their own country.
This poll doesn't, I guess maybe the Biden voters surprise me, but the Trump saying without Trump being in the administration, it doesn't surprise me that they want to secede and start over. They think that we're too liberal. They don't like the rules that are in place. They think that the blue states and people and liberals are taking over their country, and we're getting so far away from the America they once knew and loved. That does not shock me that they want to start their own country at all. But I don't think people are taking into consideration what that would really look like and how difficult that would really be. I guess it's nice to dream sometimes about what you really want because you don't like the current state that you're living in. But that doesn't surprise me that Trump voters, maybe it surprises me honestly that there aren't more that say that.
I actually have an issue with the poll.
Which
I have
side?
An issue. The poll itself. I think the poll itself is, I think the poll itself is useless. Number one, obviously there's acrimony right now between like the left and the right, the North and the South, whatever. Obviously there's acrimony, obviously, right? The poll is useless because it's not issue-based. It's as broad as everything else. It's this broad glob of negativity and nothingness that we've all waded into with no way out. The question that you ask questions along an issue based sort of standard. Okay, what are the issues that make you want to leave the union? On the left, what specific issues do you feel like are worth leaving the country for? On the right, what are the issues that you feel like are worth leaving the country for? So that we could actually have a substantive poll about where it is that we need to make strides. Because I'll be honest with you, a lot of these things have to do with different political philosophies, but then a lot of them have some specificity to them in terms of what people feel like are the lines of demarcation that they just won't step over. And that's the way you find out whether or not there's a united future of the country. You find out whether or not there's a united future of the country by finding out what's separating us and how we can get back on the same page. Just asking if people are unhappy and would rather have their own shit, that's kind of how you talk to kids. And so I have an issue, and I wonder, to be honest with you, I wonder what the results of this poll would have been like in maybe like 2006 when Bush was president. I don't know that these numbers would have been that different. You know, I'm sure they seem more polarized than they ever are, and maybe they've done this poll before than they ever have been before. But that's also because of social media, we're inundated with it a little bit more. So I think there's a method here. We have to stop broadening things to this degree. And if we're going to talk about where we're different and where we're the same, we have to be a little bit more specific. So when I see polls like this, I feel like polls are done for headlines. Because
this definitely was.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, I guess it's a useful poll to judge how polarized the country is, but these numbers, obviously, if you've been to a Trump rally, you know that this is good.
Yeah. I actually think,
or if you've seen the Trump rally,
I think that if they were to do this poll back in 2006, I would be shocked if the voters, the people who were voting, because what's shocking to me is the 41% that are voting for the current administration. Wait, I'm saying this wrong. Y'all bear with me. I'm a little under the weather. The 41%, which is the voters who voted for Biden, said 41% of them said they would secede from the nation. Mm-hmm. I think that number would have been lower in 2006. Mm. I don't think that many people who voted for Bush would have said they would have seceded from the nation. Mm. That I think people are very, a lot of the people who voted for Biden were expecting something to happen. And they, to date, they have been very disappointed with Biden, which is why I think they're like, you know what, we should secede and we can fix it ourselves. That's what I think that 41% is. But to your point about,
well, then those people aren't paying attention then, because most of the obstruction for Biden is coming from within his own party.
Correct. But I think that there are a lot of people who are just impatient, want to see something happen. I really think that's why that number is so high. I do. Mm. That's just my opinion. But to your point as well about the way that the poll is so general and it needs to be about issues, don't you think that we know the issues that are on each side? Don't you think that if you had a diagram and it was like red and blue, and then you had a whole bunch of issues and you had to put each issue under each side, that you could do that successfully? I think it's pretty clear.
I think we could. But I think we could, people who dive into this all the time, but I don't think there's enough dialogue being had. See, this is the problem with echo chambers and Twitter lynch mob and all of that stuff, is it stops conversation. You can never have a conversation and get through to the human being on the other side of things. See, I know it's interesting. I don't know if I'm softening or my brain is getting more nuanced. I can't tell what's happening to me, because I know that each side thinks that what they have to do is win. Mm-hmm. The crazy thing is that that's a very recent phenomenon in terms of intellectual and political thinking, right? Each side feels like they have to win. Trump gave us a bully that we felt like we couldn't negotiate with, that we couldn't come to terms with. So he just needed to be defeated, right? Right. Which in his case was true. I'm not going to lie. Like, the rhetoric and all the destabilization that he could do to the country and our reputation, not just here but abroad, like, he seemed like somebody to be defeated. But for the most part, winning is not the option.
Right.
Winning is not the goal. That's not the goal. The goal is compromise. That's the goal. Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. of some when you somebody that you disagree with. You mm-hmm. win wars. In negotiations, you normally come to a compromise. And so when we make things into factions and we broaden them to this degree, what happens is it stops conversation. And this has a lot to do with like even what I was talking about with Fred on the last podcast is that this sounds pussy, but at some point you got to be able to talk that out. And if that's not the way that we're going to do it, if we can't, you know what I mean? Then
yeah.
Now it's a power shift, who wins and who loses. So I think getting back to your question, it's like, yeah, we know the issues that people are hung up on, but do we know how they feel about them on a human level? Like, okay, we know that there are some things that we're not going to be able to appeal to the other side to this, for example, abortion. There mm-hmm. are hardcore people who are never going to be okay with any form of abortion. Mm-hmm. Cool. I guarantee you that number's smaller than you think it is. The question is, how many people that are on the outside of that mm-hmm. haven't heard nuanced enough arguments on either side of it to where it should be responsibly done and an option for women who want to have control over their bodies? Like, where are the people to be gained? And how do you have the conversations and have the political negotiations in order to appeal to those people? And I think that as rhetoric becomes more capital R than reason, yeah, it's an easier answer to be like, yeah, of course, I just want my own country. Just like it's harder to go to therapy for your relationship and sit through the therapy sessions than it is to get divorced.
Yeah, yeah.
So
that's
a
great point.
So like I when I first saw the poll, I was like, all right, cool, I get that. Like, what good is that? What now? What I figured that.
Yeah, I wanna, feel like a lot of things are like, now what? Okay, great. So now what?
Yeah, I want to figure out, to be honest with you. And maybe you can't with everyone. Obviously you can't with that. I want to figure out how to talk to these people, because there's got to be a way to talk to these people.
This is a different side of you. I just want to point that out. There I feel like if you go back and you listen to earlier podcasts, you're like, fuck them. Like,
well, it is. I mean, let's be honest with you. Ultimately, it's fuck them.
I like this. I like what you're bringing into the podcast.
No, but what I'm saying is this. So here's where fuck them comes in. Right is right and wrong is wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's
mm-hmm.
the fuck them part of it. And, you know, but like the other part of it is, yo, there's a lot at stake. Like there is. There's really a lot at stake.
Yes.
And everybody's going to lose because we're all just trying to win.
It's just kind of
getting to a nuts point. We'll see what happens. Rudy Giuliani is a piece of shit. Look, I flipped right back.
He's back.
I flipped right back. Well, it's true though, man. It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
So Rudy admitted that under oath, he's being deposed right now. So Dominion Voting Systems they're suing because their names got dragged through the mud, and everybody said there was a problem with Dominion voting systems during the 2020 election and that they didn't work and that they were being hacked and misused. So now they're suing. They already got all up in Newsmax's ass and made them take the shit back on air. And now, in this case, Rudy Giuliani is being deposed, and Rudy says he got some of his information from Facebook. He said he got some of his information about the specific guy who was allegedly involved in this stuff from Facebook. When he was asked whether or not he had interviewed the guy or talked to the guy, he said no. He said when he was asked whether or not members of his team had talked to this person who allegedly had some role in hacking Dominion voting equipment, he says probably, maybe, I'm sure that they did. He couldn't remember when he said Facebook at first. I listened to the clip, or I listened to a transcript of it, as Rachel Maddow read it. He said Facebook at first, but then he couldn't even be sure that it was Facebook.
Right.
It could have been Twitter. It could have been Instagram. In any case, it came from social media. A large portion of what he was using as his frame of reference to go around and propagate the big lie. Now, this is maybe not the strongest topic to follow up the first topic with, because this is the type of shit that would make you want to go have your own country. you know what I mean? The deposition was taken on August 14th. Eric Coomer is the name of the guy who worked for Dominion Voting Systems that they say were hacking the shit and cooking the shit over there. You saw this, and what's your first thought when you see something like this?
It's terrifying to me.
It's very scary.
I mean, and I'm looking up Rudy Giuliani right now because Rudy Giuliani has clerked for judges, has worked with, you know, in administrations, has advised very prominent people, went to a prestigious law school, been on Law Review. He knows how to do research. He knows what evidence is. And yet he made wild accusations and used social media as his point of reference to back up these things he was accusing Dominion of. If Rudy Giuliani is doing this, imagine all the other people who don't necessarily have the same intellect as he does that are going to social media and getting their information and determining it factual just because it's put out there on social media. That is terrifying. You have led a whole charge against the fact that the election was rigged based on information you got off of somebody's social media page. The power of social media, it truly is terrifying. If he can do it, imagine all the other people, not that can do it, that are doing it.
Yeah. Which brings me to my next point here.
Uh-huh.
Thought warriors, there are rules to being a thought warrior. Okay? Just gonna let you guys know. There are rules. Number one, we read articles.
Mm-hmm.
We read articles.
Not headlines.
Not headlines. Number one, we read articles. Number two, we do not get educated by a meme. I don't give a fuck what the meme says. I don't care what the meme says. If a meme gets sent around, your first job as a thought warrior is to Google that shit. All right? And number three, refer back to number one and number two. This is the problem. By the way, I've been a victim of this. I've done this. We've all done this. I've never done it while representing the president in something like The Big Lie, but I've taken something, oh shit, especially when it feeds my narrative, when it makes me sufficiently mad and then shared it without actually doing that. But we got to stop doing that. And this is a big deal. We think about this as being a nuisance, like when your grandmama sends you something. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, baby, did you hear that Beyonce left Jay-Z and he's now married to Trina? And then you're like, nah, that didn't happen. Well, I seen it on Facebook. No, it didn't happen. It's a nuisance when she does it. But obviously, it's traveled all the way up to the fucking people who are fucking around the people who run the country. And God damn it, is Rudy Giuliani, he's not. I keep about to ask this question. Is he okay? Like, what a fall from grace.
He was so desperate to find something to fit his narrative, to hold on to what they had, that he went to social media. That's all that is.
Right. Right. And they actually, they used it. He was the guy representing Trump. So once again, it's just disgusting. It's terrible.
It's only going to get worse, which is why I was thrilled today when social media was down. Were you okay?
Here's the thing. I think the wrong one was down.
What was it? Facebook?
Oh, no. Facebook could be down. No, Facebook could be down.
All Facebook-owned things were pretty much down.
I got to be honest with you. I've done this before. I've done this this hierarchy of social medias that I thought were okay and ones that I feel like were less harmful. But if we're being honest, at this point, it's like a tie, right?
Between what?
Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. They're all pretty.
They are, but Facebook has the most viewers. I mean, the most members, however you say it.
Yeah. I heard a stat today. I actually watched it on the 60 Minutes thing. We'll talk about this in Facebook a little bit later because something really important was uncovered about Facebook that I think changes my view of Facebook fundamentally. It said 60% of the people who use the internet have Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about it. It started in what, 2004?
Something like that. 17 years old, Facebook.
And there had been nothing. There was nothing like it. Nothing. Nobody had ever seen it. It was amazing. You remember when it first came out? It was amazing. You were connecting with people that you had never been connected with in years.
My thing was that I feel like Facebook kicked MySpace off the corner because I was a big MySpace user. And at first, I was a big MySpace user. And I stayed loyal to MySpace. I stayed down with my nigga Tom until Tom was in rehab. You know, I was with Tom through the good times, and then I was with Tom. I was with Tom when I was when he was in my top eight, and then I was with Tom when Tom was calling me up like, "Yo, let me hold $5, man. This nigga Facebook kicking my back in." And then eventually, Tom was too toxic. I had to get rid of him, and then I got with Facebook, and she started fucking everybody. By the time everybody, but I could blog. I was blogging on Facebook. I was doing all kinds of stuff. Facebook just had more shit. It was better. It was a better product.
Yeah, it was, and that's why it's still around. And yeah, it owns, and now it eats up all the others. Buys Instagram. What else does it own?
Not sure, but Instagram is the big one. WhatsApp, I think it owns WhatsApp now, because WhatsApp was down too. So in case you guys were wondering, we haven't covered it much here, but there was a government shutdown that was threatened last week. But the government shutdown has been avoided. President Biden signed a 9-week funding bill, which means December 3rd, we got to come back and do this entire thing. So they signed the legislation on Thursday, avoided a partial government shutdown, keeping the government funded through December 3rd. Congress had passed the bill earlier Thursday. Okay, there's a lot that goes on during this. I actually am interested in having somebody come on the podcast.
Yeah.
Experts Corner, and break down exactly how this bill is intertwined with the reconciliation bill, is intertwined with the infrastructure bill, and just how the political machinations up on Capitol Hill are affecting the average everyday American, and what this means for the recovery of the U.S. economy after COVID, and also what this means for a little bit of the brinkmanship that's being played with members of the Democratic Party and, of course, guys on the other side like Mitch McConnell and stuff. There's a lot of dick measuring going on Capitol Hill right now.
Yeah.
A lot of dick measuring.
And we've been here before. Like, this isn't the first time we've been up against this, but usually what happens is whoever is in administration doesn't matter. I mean, the Democrats did this with the Republicans. Three times they voted in favor of, like, extending the limit or whatever. So, but now they want to go back and forth and they want to...
No,
basically,
there's no now. The Republicans aren't fucking around. I keep telling people this. I'm about to get pissed off. The Democrats voted three times what you're talking about to raise the debt ceiling, right?
Yes, they did.
So that
under Trump.
So Trump. So let me tell you guys, the next time you talk to a Republican, any of these guys, I saw Ben Shapiro had a podcast called Spin, 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 Spin. The Republicans are full of fucking shit. Trump spent more fucking money and nobody cared. Ted Cruz was on Axios, admitting that he had not made the deficit an issue under President Trump. But magically, if Trump were to lose the election, the deficit would then become an issue again. And he was called out on Axios by that, and he had absolutely zero response to that. Somebody posted that on Thought Wars. Somebody posted that on the Reddit. Ted Cruz actually admitted to the politicizing of the deficit and to the fiscal health of the United States government, right? So what we're seeing right now is, once again, the Republicans need something to run on in 2022. And what the narrative that they're going to run on is the Democrats are spending and spending and spending and spending and spending us into oblivion, right? And we had to check the purse strings of Washington and not let them expand or increase the debt limit. And all of this, when the Democrats, trying to be good soldiers, did it three times under Trump and didn't politicize it at all. They had different things to win elections on.
Right.
So what I'm saying, everybody spends so they can't spend anymore in Washington. It's all a bunch of bullshit. Do not be fucking fooled when you go to the ballot box as if the Republicans are the fiscally responsible wing of the American government. It's just a lie.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I'm so for bringing someone on to talk about this, because, again, this is that goes back to the three rules you just named with being a thought warrior. You got to be paying attention to doing this research yourself. Otherwise, you'll just fall into the narrative of, oh, this is just now happening under Biden's administration. Biden just became the president, you guys. He just got in office. So anyways, we'll find somebody. We'll bring him on the podcast and we'll break
Maybe
it Bakari. All down.
Maybe it's time to get Bakari's ass on this podcast.
Let's bring Bakari on. I'm
the
all for
fuck
it.
What is up with Bakari, man? Bakari's tall, by the way. Did you notice? You ever met Bakari?
No, this is such a random
thing. Bakari's like 6'5".
Like, is he really?
Yeah, man. I'm used to meeting people. And then, like, I have this little thing that goes in my head. Like, I meet somebody. I'm like, oh, what's up, little nigga? You know what I'm saying? Because most of the people, like 95%, I'm 6'4", they're like going to be shorter, right? Mm-hmm. And Bakari, I met Bakari and I was like, we're in the picture and they're like, I'm like, oh, this nigga tall.
You know, I did saying? Not know he was 6'5".
He's like, yeah, he's like, he's tall. Probably can't dunk though. Probably can't even slap the back.
Stop, get off Bakari. Before you on him, he ain't even come on the podcast yet.
All right, let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
Something going on over at ESPN. ESPN is a cauldron of mess right now. I feel like ESPN people are, it's just more public. I'm sure shit like this always happens, but it's just more public. Stephen A. Smith is the host of ESPN's First Take. He has been the host of First Take since, I think, like 2012, 2011 or something like that, because it was Skip, and then Skip was going with, it was Cold Pizza, then Stephen A. Smith's come on. It was one of the most wildly popular and sort of important shows on ESPN's schedule. One of the biggest things about working at TMZ was I used to be pissed off that I would miss First Take.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because I had to be to work at 6 a.m. And so when I got to, at TMZ, I had to be there at 6 in the morning. And so I wouldn't get a chance to watch First Take. And so I remember when I was thinking about not working at TMZ anymore, I was like, damn, I'll be at the wake up in the morning, watch First Take, the whole nine and whatever. So anyway, Skip Bayless left the show some years ago. I think it was 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And after that, a very knowledgeable sports guy, particularly about boxing, but in sports overall, Max Kellerman became Stephen A. Smith's co-host. And a lot of people, when that was first announced, thought, hey, that's a very natural fit. Max likes to mix it up. He's very charismatic. It seemed like there'd be just enough conflict between him and Stephen A. that the show would be good. Well, 5 years later, Max Kellerman is off of First Take. Stephen A. Smith has been very candid about the fact that he got Max Kellerman kicked off the show. He said that he did an interview with Hot 97 where he said, a lot of people are saying that it was me that I wanted Max off the show. And he was like, yeah. Now, hold on. Let me make sure I say that right. He didn't get Max kicked off the show. He wanted Max kicked off the show.
Right.
He can't get Max kicked off the show because it's not his decision about who his co-host is going to be. He was very clear in that interview. I want to make sure that I leave that the way that it is, the way that he actually said it. And now he's upset that there's a narrative being put out there that he doesn't like Max Kellerman. He went on the latest Sports Illustrated Media podcast and said this. I think that people get construed thinking, Stephen A. doesn't like Max. It couldn't be further from the truth. I like him and I respect him, Stephen A. Smith said. I think Max is one of the nicest guys in the world. He's incredibly knowledgeable about his boxing and other sports, by the way. And he talked about the fact that he likes Max and he doesn't think that it's right that people think that he doesn't like Max. Now, you didn't have to have Max Kellerman leave First Take to think that Stephen A. Smith didn't like him. If you watch the show, it didn't seem like Stephen A. Smith liked Max Kellerman very much. Like, he was always very cordial and warm with Skip. And it never seemed like him and Max had that relationship. But you never want to speculate because they're doing a debate show, you know? But now it's just interesting that he's saying this after admitting that he wanted Max off the show. Larry Wilmore, a guest of our show, I actually
saw Larry's tweet.
Yeah, I actually saw that. Like I said, First Take sucks now because the show now sucks. They're rotating guys in. They haven't found it yet. I'm sure they'll be fine. They haven't found it yet. And it's kind of bad. And Larry Wilmore said, yeah, that's what's going to happen when one guy gets the other guy, the co-host, kicked off the show. Do you think Stephen A. Smith is throwing a stone and hiding his hand now? Of course we're going to assume that you didn't like the guy if you got him removed or if you told them that you wanted him removed as your co-host.
Well, you could also argue that it doesn't mean that it's not necessarily that he doesn't like him. He doesn't like him as the co-host. And I think that's what he's trying to say. I didn't want him as my co-host anymore. It doesn't mean that I don't like him as a person. I just don't like him as my co-host. I want something different. But I will say, to add to that, what made it worse and what I think, the reason I think people have run with this narrative is the day Max left, on Max's last day, not only was Stephen A. Smith not in studio, he didn't even show up on Zoom. And so for a lot of people, it was like, damn, this is Max's last day and you're not even here.
Wait, I thought he was there.
No, he was not. He said goodbye over the phone.
Oh, it was over the phone. It Correct. Certainly was. Yeah, I remember hearing his voice that last day, but mm-hmm. it was over the phone. Yeah.
And so it wasn't even by video. There wasn't even a video message. And ever since Max has been gone, and if you watch First Take, Stephen A. wasn't in the studio a lot. Now, at first, that was because of COVID, but then Molly was back in studio. Molly and Max were both there together, and Stephen A. still wasn't there. Since Max has left the show and he has a new show now called This Just In, Stephen A's been in the studio every day. That plays into the narrative of you didn't like Max. So I think that's another reason why people are running with that, because they're looking at the optics of everything. But I do think it's possible to not like somebody as your co-host, but it doesn't mean that you dislike them as a person, which is where Stephen A. Smith is coming from.
I think that's true. Number one, I think they had the number one show. And so not liking somebody as your co-host and then asking to have him removed as the co-host when you have the number one show, I just think there's got to be something about it, about that person that you don't like.
Wanted it to be by himself.
Maybe so. Well, even if that's the case, that's kind of fucked up, because to be honest with you, we've never really seen First Take with Stephen A. as like by himself. Like, we've seen it with Skip by himself, and now we'll see how good the show is. And I'll be honest with you, the show is not very good now, but it wasn't really that, in my opinion, it wasn't really that great the last couple of years that Max was on it too. Cause all the arguments seemed about more than sports.
And you don't like that? You didn't like that the arguments were kind of a reflection of what was going on?
No, I when I say more than sports, it just seemed like he was annoyed with Max Kellerman, period.
Yeah.
Like, it just seemed like he was just annoyed at the way. And by the way, you guys, Max is very haughty. Max is, if you think Van is a know-it-all, Max is a know-it-all. He is very haughty. He's hilariously wrong on some things. And I think that annoys Stephen A. Smith a little bit. And so you just kind of saw it, that maybe the workplace wasn't as fun for him. The workplace wasn't as fun for him with Max there. I still don't think that's a reason to like tell your fucking, I'll be honest with you. You know what I first thought about this when I saw this weeks ago? Mm-hmm. If this were a woman that had done this, if there were two women hosting the show, like mm-hmm. this in a First Take situation, mm-hmm. not a situation where one of the women had created the show and was doing all of this on the show and blah, blah, blah. If this was a female-led show and two women, and one woman went and told them that they wanted the other woman kicked off the show, she would get dragged through the mud.
Yeah.
She would get dragged through the mud up and down. And Stephen A. Smith basically got Max kicked off of ESPN's number one morning show for no reason other than the fact that he wanted it that way, when the numbers were great, and it seems like nobody cares. It's just, okay, Stephen,
I
can do that.
I think the numbers were starting to go down. The same sentiment that you're having about the last 2 years being different and the chemistry being off. I think that that was the general consensus of what the people thought about the show. But the other side of it is we don't know if Max was involved in those conversations. The way it looks now, because we haven't heard from Max, is that Stephen A. spoke out that he didn't want him as his co-host, and that was it. We have no idea if Max wanted to leave. We have no idea.
Stephen, he said it. They did.
He
the
said
Hot
Max didn't want to leave.
He on and during the Hot 97 during the Hot 97 interview, he said that he told the people this, that he wanted Max gone, and then he told Max.
And, oh damn.
And
I'm trying to help Stephen A. Smith out. I will tell you this though. They cannot keep this up. They're gonna have to fill that seat with somebody. And the question is, will somebody want to sit in that seat knowing what happened to Max? That's
hell
the thing.
No.
Because it could end your career. Like I mean, Max is still under contract and they gave him another show, and he also is doing radio and he replaced Zubin on the morning show. He replaced Zubin.
And he's got Zubin on. Yeah, so he's doing fine.
For the next person coming in, it could end their career. You know, you want somebody like Stephen A. rooting for you and in your corner because he does have so much credibility in the sports world. So it's going to be hard for them to find somebody who wants to sit in that chair more than one day a week like Michael Irvin.
Yeah, they got Michael Irvin. They got a couple other people. But my thing is right now, I mean, obviously, it's a shit ton of money, but you have to be really solidified somewhere else to go sit there knowing that if he decides one day, for whatever reason, that he doesn't want you on the show, that ESPN is going to put you off of the show. Like, you know, and it's not like they did it immediately, because he said he had been saying it for a while. It's not like they did it immediately, but it's just... That's hard. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, man. I don't know Stephen A. Smith, but that's a dick move, man.
I just think that he's talking too much to people.
I wouldn't do that.
That interview sounds terrible. That interview doesn't, if he was trying to defend what he did, that interview does not paint him in the best light. Like, I think that, you know, you were on the show before Max. If you feel like the show is taking a turn for the worse, if you feel like your chemistry is off, then there's obviously conversations that can be had that maybe things need to be shaken up to bring the show back to what made it so great. And maybe that means Max has to go. But the interview makes it sound worse. Maybe it means he has to go. Maybe it does.
Maybe that means you have to go.
But I think that one would argue that Stephen A. Smith is more of the draw than Max. But things have... It's just the way that it's all coming out to the public.
Sure.
It's making it sound so messy. And then with New York Post putting out these articles that are not in favor of him, it's like, well, who's your source? Who's your source? We say Max is a talker. Who's your source? And what does Molly think?
Only thing I'd say is like, what does Molly think? Look, I think that we might be getting into a time where shows like First Take and Undisputed
just started.
They just might have run their course, period. But I'm talking about shows like that. Undisputed, it's fine, right? Look, they had a crescendo. They had First Take used to be, it was the best show on television, basically. Like, you woke up, you watched it, Skip, go back. But even Skip ain't the same now. And Stephen A. is not the same anymore.
They
turned kind of into caricatures a little bit. They still have, happens to everyone. It's just sometimes it happens to everyone. Happens to everybody. All right, we'll stay on ESPN.
Don't do that.
Sage Steele, your friend.
Don't do that. She's not my friend. She's somebody else's friend.
She's your pal. Whose friend is she? Trudy?
They're very good friends.
That's right. She's Soup Kitchen's friend. Boy, Soup Kitchen. Soup Kitchen, you got what you deserved. I'm not going to lie, Soup Kitchen. Soup Kitchen got what he deserved. Sage Steele is Soup Kitchen's friend. Okay. She dissed Barack Obama. She dissed Barack Obama. She did a three for here. We're going to go. I want all the audio for this if we can play it. Donnie, can we play this audio? So I want all the audio for this. So she dissed three different people. She dissed the president. She dissed a lot of people. She dissed the president. She dissed the president's dad. Okay, the ex-president, Barack Obama, and his father. She then dissed women who want to dress however they want to dress. Then she dissed women again in an indirect way. So these are the things that Sage Steele said when she was on Jay Cutler's podcast. His podcast is called Interception. That's the name of the podcast. Interception with Jay Cutler. Because that's what he's known for. No, it's not called that. I don't know what the name is.
And I thought, wow, that's weird. That's weird for him to want to call it that.
No. It's called And Picked Off Again, Jay Cutler. So this is the first thing she said. And this is what she had to say on racial identity and President Barack Obama. Check this out.
Well, I don't know when the last time I filled out my census was, but yeah. If they make you choose a race, she's like, what are you going to put? I go, well, both. She's like, well, you can't. She goes, well, what if Barack Obama chose black and he's biracial? I'm like, well, congratulations to the president. That's his thing. I go, I think that's fascinating considering his black dad was nowhere to be found, but his white mom and grandma raised him. But hey, you do you. I'm going to do me.
Interesting. Rachel, your thoughts. This is somebody you know.
It's not somebody I know. It's somebody who I've come into contact with. Have I told you the first time I met Sage?
No, tell me.
The first time I met Sage was at a pre ESPYs party, and she comes.
She asked you if she could touch your hair.
No, sadly, that did not. That was her experience, not mine. Would you like to reference that, y'all? That's a whole other story.
Look it up, guys.
Anyways, she comes running over to me and she grabs me and she's like, oh my God, I love you. And I love you because you said, you know what? I don't care what you have to say. I'm going to choose a non-black man.
Wow. Oh my God. Oh shit. Oh my God. Yo.
And you didn't care what America thought. You didn't care. You said, I'm going to pick him. And you didn't feel forced to choose somebody who was black. And I was sitting there like halfway. I liked this has been 4 years ago. Halfway. I'm like, I like Stage. She's a woman who is of color and who is, you know, had a long career in the media, and I'm aspiring to this, but then I'm listening to you and the first thing you say to me is how thrilled you are that I didn't choose black. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, who is this woman? Mm-hmm. And then since then I've started to learn more about how problematic she can be. So if you don't know who Sage Steele is, just let my story speak for itself. This is a woman who is so obsessed with racial identity, but not just in being proud of what she looks like and who she is, or even being proud of her father who's black. She's more proud of the fact that her father was in the military than the fact that he was like a black man in it, or that, you know, he married outside of his race, similar to what she said to me. She is so obsessed with this for the wrong reasons that, of course, I'm not shocked to hear her say something like this, but then the disrespect of saying, President Obama can't identify himself as a black man because his father wasn't around. That's dissing people, all people whose fathers weren't around. Like, you can't be of that person. You can't identify yourself to that person just because they might be absentee. That is so twisted. But I wonder if you would have said that if he had been, if the father was white, would you have used that same logic? There just seems to be a self-hatred when it comes to her. And Sage, when people see you, they see a black woman. I'm sorry. That's what they see. I hate to break it to you. I hate to be the one to tell you that. But that's what they see when they see you.
Yeah. When they see you.
When they see you.
It's so Sage. Sage is so crazy. I like that. That's the type of shit I like. I just like blatantly wrong motherfuckers. You know what I mean? Like, you remember what Hulk Hogan said? What Hulk Hogan said was so blissful. Hulk Hogan said, I work with a lot of black guys, but I don't want my daughter bringing no nigga
He did
home.
Say that. I forgot he said
Hulk Hogan said, if you gonna date a nigga, don't date one of these rapping niggas. Go get you one of them 6'8" basketball playing niggas and date one of them. And he, like, Hulk Hogan is just a virulent, vicious, down in the pit of his stomach, nigga hater. That's the type of shit I'm talking. Sage walked up to you and said, hey, Rachel, I love you. Not because you're a strong woman. Not because you don't take no shit. Not because you're a lawyer. Not because you went to the University of Texas. Not because of any of these things. You come from a great family. All of these things. You broke barriers. She said, I like it because you chose a white.
And a crowd full of people. This isn't like I was by myself. Just a crowd full. I'm trying to network.
It's like, I like you because you chose a white. Woo! Sage. Yeah. Sage, that's not all Sage had to say. Hell no. Sage also gave her thoughts on women dressing provocatively and how men react to it. Donnie, roll it.
I do think as women, we need to be responsible as well. It isn't just on players and athletes and coaches to act a certain way. I mean, I've had talks with young women who like would come in and they'd intern with me, with our channel, or just other women who reach out to me now. And I've said to a couple of them, they're like, well, would you look at my tape? Would you do this? And I've said, listen, I would love to, but the way that you present yourself is not something I want to be associated with.
Yeah.
So when you dress like that, I'm not saying you deserve the gross comments, but you know what you're doing when you're putting that outfit on too.
Yeah.
Like, women are smart. So don't play coy and put it all on the guys when we, and again, I'm not saying anybody deserves anything.
Yes.
But we need to be responsible as women too, because we know what we're doing when we put certain things on and then return a certain text. Are you expect somebody's not going to see you if you go to dinner with this guy? Like, that's on us.
Mm-hmm. I want to, it's interesting. I want to know what Jay Cutler said there. I'll have to go listen to it right now. I have to listen to what old Pick Off Cuts had to say. Rach, last time I checked, you're a woman. What are your thoughts on that? Sage says, wear clothes at your own risk.
You know, it's disappointing to hear. Have you seen the article about Katie Couric in her new book?
No.
The reason
we're not
I'm talking
about Katie later, though.
But the reason I'm talking, you got to read this Page Six article about her new book. It's wild. Uh-huh. And I have no idea why nobody monitored this book and is letting Katie say these things about herself. But the reason I'm bringing it up is because one of the things that comes out is Katie couldn't understand why other women in the office wouldn't confide in her, wouldn't talk to her, wouldn't tell her when certain things were going on around the show. And as she goes deeper into her book, she talks about the jealousy she had of other up-and-coming women, how, you know, she would go to the higher-ups and say certain things. And it basically, it's like Katie wasn't about uplifting other women. All these young women who come up and look up to Katie and want to know how they could do better in the industry, Katie was more looked at them as a threat and was putting them down. And that's the vibe that she was putting out. That's how Sage comes off to me. Sage, I could see her right now in a room full of men being like putting women down rather than lifting them up. When you look at someone who had to fight or, you know, was breaking down barriers to get to the position that they were, you think that they would have the backs of these other women and would be trying to help them out. And rather than saying, I can't look at your tape because of the way you're dressed, why don't you lift them up and help them, or basically fight for them in the room and be like, it shouldn't matter what women are wearing. It should matter what they bring to the table, what they can talk about, the subject matter. You know, why are you blaming women? She keeps saying, I'm not blaming women, but you are blaming women for the way that they dress and why they can't succeed, rather than holding the men accountable for not, you know, like, don't treat women like a piece of meat. Don't judge them by the way that they're dressed. Women should be able to express themselves in whatever way that they want to. But instead of Sage lifting women up and fighting for them, she's blaming them. It's very Katie Couric vibes here. And it's disappointing because you want to think that other women are supporting other women and have their back and are lifting them up and are fighting for them in spaces that there aren't a lot of them in. And Sage is not one of those people.
First of all, I have to very well said. But I have to break something to Sage still, and unfortunately break it to women. It doesn't matter what you wear. Not really.
Men are going to be men.
It doesn't matter, man. You could be coming down the block in some basketball shorts. If that thing is stanging, We are biologically hardwired to be like, ooh. You know, and that's the sound that all men make. Every man makes that sound. To be honest with you, do you know what?
What's the sound?
Do you know what Brian first said to himself when he saw you? That's the sound.
Stop.
It's true. That's the sound. So it's a D into exec. It's a D intellectual lacquer. I hate this word. Hold on. Intellectualization. It's a de-intellectualization of the issue for Sage Steele to say what she said. It's just not smart. Okay. It posits something that's completely asinine. And it's what that's more about. It's not about men's biological urges or men's whatever. Men have hit on women in times where you had to wear skirts down to your ankles. Men have hit, or some men go to strip clubs and have respect for the dancers and they can control themselves. Some men go to football games and yell harassing things at the cheerleaders. The behavior is the important thing. The behavior is what you have to actually focus in on. Mm-hmm. And the entitlement of that. And there's nothing that's going to make you break who you are. Who you are is informed by what you've been reared to believe is okay. So if you think it's okay to get at your interns and you're going to get at them no matter what they wear. If you think that a woman is signaling something to you by the way she's dressed, then you're going to do it, right? You're going to do it. You're going to say, hey, she likes that. This is what she wanted. What she wanted to do was wear a sweater. That's what she wanted. You're confusing what she wanted with what you want.
Right.
And Sage is just not a smart thing to say. Like, I know she's great at her job, but it's such a 7th to 9th grade 1987 way of looking at the world. And you would hope that people in those positions would have changed by now. Are there people that dress for attention? Of course. When we all go out to the club and I leave the top button open and I let the little chain come through, I want people to say, oh, look at Van. Ooh, 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 ooh. And when the girls are out at the clubs and they're dressed like that, yeah, they trying to show their shit off. Not necessarily.
And nothing's wrong with that. What's wrong with wanting to look good?
No. By the way, and they're not necessarily trying to show their shit off to catch a nigga. They trying to show their shit off because it's time to dance. You know what I'm saying?
It makes them feel confident and it makes them feel good.
But guess what? The them is the them. It don't give you carte blanche to do nothing. You still exactly. Gotta be you.
It's not permission.
Come on, Sage.
Well, Sage has daughters. So it's like, so if something happened, it's like you have this mentality where it's like, would you really turn to your daughter and say, well, what were you wearing?
Do you think that Sage named her daughters Thyme and Parsley? Because, you know, it's like,
stop. It's Sage. So, that might be one of the corniest things that you said.
I like that shit. But time, but what is Sage? Sage isn't even a herb, though, is it? What is Sage?
A color.
No, but like when you sage something, what is that? Is that like a herb that you get from the earth? What is it?
It's not a herb.
When you sage something, where are you burning? What is sage?
Great question.
See, we don't even know. We just be doing shit. See, thought warriors.
No,
research
Sage has meaning. It's an it's a plant.
It's a plant. Okay, so I was right. It's a plant. Sage. Come on, man.
Sage. I was gonna say something. I was gonna say something else about her.
Nah,
but
you want to say it.
Had enough. I do. It does bother me though that Sage gets to like really say some off the cuff things that are very problematic, and are not in line technically with ESPN. But other people can say something and it's a huge problem. I mean, she said a lot of stuff. Like, this is derogatory towards women, towards Black folks. Now she's talking about the how she didn't want the mandate and she thinks it's sick and it's like a company policy and all of this stuff. Like, that's problematic. Yet she gets away with saying this stuff, but other people who have worked with ESPN don't.
Hey, it happens. Sometimes you never know who people's you know, upper level pals are. Maybe not. She's doing her thing. Whatever, Sage. All right, let's take a break.
This episode is brought to you by Vuori. I love sports. I know you do too. I also know that lots of you exercise, but if you're like me and my wife, the beloved sports gal, you're sick and tired of ugly, uncomfortable workout gear. Especially, you know, I do a lot of walking. I walk around LA. I make calls. I listen to podcasts. Here are two words that will change everything. Vuori Clothing, a line of activewear that is unbelievable. The best thing about Vuori is you can lounge around in it. You can work out in it. You can go outside. You can go shopping down your local wherever. And you never feel like you're either underdressed or overdressed. You're just comfortable. You can wear it when you're training, traveling, lounging around the house. Go get yourself some of the most comfortable and versatile clothing on the planet. Here's the deal. Our listeners get 20% off their first purchase at Vuori.com/Simmons. Once again, Vuori.com/Simmons.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. I was traveling internationally last year. I was in Mallorca. I didn't know the island well. I said, let me head to the north, head towards the water. Let me go on Hotels.com and see what they have available. Something preferably on the beach, maybe even a gym. Not only did I get those things, there was a kids session with exercise, gymnastics in the water, pony rides, a train. It had everything, and I didn't even want any of those things. But at least I knew they were there, just in case I changed my mind. And now finding the perfect hotel has never been easier thanks to the Hotels.com app. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly, right, all-inclusive, or a relaxing spa weekend, you can find exactly what you need and compare hotel prices, ratings, and amenities side by side. So start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app.
All right, this video took over the internet. We got a couple more topics to get to, but we got to talk about this one. Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer is currently the coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. They are 0-4, but they're starting a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach. They're figuring out their way. Trevor Lawrence, the number one overall pick, plays there in Jacksonville. Urban Meyer was caught on video at a bar that he owns. This is after a loss that they lost to the Bengals, okay? Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, shout out to them. He was out in Ohio, and he was getting wined up on by some lady who wasn't his wife of 35 years. The video is hilarious. It shows Urban Meyer rubbing his Oscar Meyer all over some co-ed. He's sitting down on the bar stool.
How do you know she's a co-ed?
And what doesn't co-ed just mean a girl?
Oh.
Or does it mean somebody
in
college?
I thought it meant college.
Okay, so maybe she's not a co-ed. Maybe she's a...
But I could be wrong.
Adult ed. But it's a blonde, attractive blonde, and Urban took a picture with her later, hammered, okay? Hammered. And a lot of people have a problem with this because this is not Urban Meyer's wife. Let me ask you a question. Let's say you see video of Brian in the same situation. There's no sex happening. There's no nothing happening. Would you be mad if you saw that same thing? It's just dancing. They're just dancing. They're just two kids having a dance.
I would have been on the first flight to Ohio. I would have been there in the morning when you woke up. How about that? How about just dancing? First of all, I don't deal just well dancing. With public embarrassment. You're not about to embarrass me in front of all these folks. And I know you saw the tweet where she was at home with the grandkids talking about how Urban deserved a night out. He deserved it. And on your night out, this is what you're going to do? You're just going to disrespect me like this in public too? We got a problem.
So look, I'm not trying to take up for Urban Meyer here. I'm really not. Because his fucking goose is cooked, and he's already apologized to the team for being a distraction. He's already apologized to everyone. I'm sure he's going to apologize over and over again to his wife. But let's put it like this. Urban Meyer is cooked in this video. He is blasted, completely plastered, right? And he's sitting on the thing, and the girl is dancing right in front of him. I could make a case that the real issue here is the fact that he's being recorded while he's at this bar. And not like, seriously, because I'm looking at him. Maybe he didn't even realize.
Stop. You are going the wrong way. Like, stop. You don't need to do this to yourself. He Oscar was having Meyer. Just a little too much fun, thought nobody would see him. No one would recognize him. People were making jokes that he wasn't even in Jacksonville gear. He had put up back on the Ohio State gear. Listen, he got caught. He got caught slipping. Now, so I don't believe in recording people without their permission, sure. But I also don't believe in acts of indiscretion.
Acts of indiscretion, grinding up on it. So this is the thing that Urban Meyer is learning. It's interesting that we get to see Urban Meyer and the crash course that he's getting in being an NFL head coach. I'll tell you why. There's a chance that if this happens and Urban Meyer is the head coach at Ohio State, that maybe they're not looking to embarrass the coach. You know what I mean? It depends. Like, people go through great lengths in situations like this, especially if they're not going to sell the video. If in cities like Baton Rouge, even though our coach Ed Orgeron has been getting it a little frisky out there lately, a little Ed O. You haven't seen that? Ed O got some blondes down there. But in places like Baton Rouge,
that's why he can't call the games right.
Yeah, it's very, very sucked. He's on a fucking life support right now. Places like Baton Rouge, Tallahassee, Gainesville, Columbus. They worship these coaches. They worship these coaches, man. But these guys, they abuse shit like this and they go crazy all the time. I wonder if Urban, if stuff like this and it being such a big deal is going to push Urban Meyer back to college football quicker than we think. For y'all don't know, Urban Meyer was one of the best coaches in college football history. He won 2 championships at Florida, 1 championship at Ohio State, left Ohio State, went to the broadcast booth, then went to the pros, and there's a lot of talk that maybe he'll go back to college football. So,
is that her?
That's no. So here's the thing. We're looking at it now. So one of these women is his wife. That woman is his wife. But see the blonde? Yeah, that's the girl.
That's look at
Coach
one?
O. Yeah, look at Coach O. Look at Coach O getting it.
He
posed.
He didn't even care.
He didn't pose. These college football coaches, it's different, man. It's different. Wow. These college football coaches are abusing shit now.
Wow.
They're going nuts. I'm telling you. All right. Last sports topic. Do you care about the Super Bowl halftime show? Do you care about it? By the way, just to let you know, Urban Meyer says he was just, they were trying to pull him out on the dance floor. They were just messing around. There was a table next to him.
Ass
they were just
first?
Messing yeah.
She tried to pull him out with her
he
ass?
Said, there was a big group next to our restaurant. And they wanted me to come over and take pictures, and I did. They were trying to pull me out on the dance floor, screwing around, and I should have left. That's what he said. Can that not be possible?
So he made an excuse. Urban Meyer ain't shit. He made an excuse. Just say you're sorry and keep it moving. Because right. She had that video was what, 15, 20 seconds?
Yeah.
And she was still going.
You want in that position, just so we know, in that situation, as a man, you want your man to push the woman away.
Get up. Walk away.
Get up.
Like,
walk
how
away
powerful
from that ass.
Would have been if you just saw him get up and just walk away.
How powerful. How powerful would have been. How powerful would have been.
It would have
like
made a statement.
Super powerful.
He
how
just
powerful.
Stood up and walked away. Like, look at that self-control that Urban Meyer
That'd
has.
Be so crazy. Just to let you know. Coach Meyer says no to ass, but that's not what he did. He put his Oscar Meyer out there. Super Bowl halftime show, Dr. Dre, Kendrick Lamar, Eminem, Mary J. Blige, and Snoop. Your thoughts?
Oh, I thought you said it's stupid, but you said and Snoop. And I was like, mm-hmm. Really? That's how you feel? Mm-hmm. When they announced it, I was surprised. I was like, oh, are these 5 people together? 3 makes sense to me because they're LA. Mm-hmm. I wonder how they went about picking Mary J. and Eminem. These 5 people have never been on stage together before. So it's just an interesting group that they put together. I wonder if like Dre was like, hey, I want this person and this person. I just wonder how it went about. I think I was most excited though, because we've been wanting new music from Kendrick and now we're getting a whole performance mm-hmm. on such a big stage. So I'm with it. Somebody asked me at the office, I think it was at the office, was wondering if people were still boycotting, by people they meant black folks, the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they were a little shocked that these prominent figures in the community, in the industry, were agreeing to do this. But I told them when I was at the Fenty show, someone asked Rihanna if she would perform at halftime, and she said, who wouldn't? So I feel like maybe that was right around the year with Kaepernick, and maybe because he's settled and the NFL has, you know, pledged to take all these steps to help the Black community, maybe people are like, you know what, now we're ready to step back into doing things with the NFL. I'm not sure.
So here's the thing. The NFL has also, Pepsi and the NFL, are going to support the launch of Regional School Number 1. It's a magnet high school in South Los Angeles that is set to open for students next fall as a part of the LA Unified School District. The high school is based on the USC Iovine and Young Academy, a program that was founded by Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre. Do you know what this means? This Super Bowl lineup.
What does it mean?
It's over. The NFL won. So this is the NFL won. This is what it means. It's over. It's officially over.
Okay.
There's no way that this lineup could have been possible to me even last year or the year before. No way. Certainly not the year before. I'm watching Saints games again. The cultural momentum, the conversation, the critical mass around Colin Kaepernick's schism with the NFL is over. It's done. And there are casualties in this. There are casualties, okay? The first striking blow that the NFL made was when they were able to get Jay-Z to work with them. That was the first salvo in this, okay? Secondly, was after Colin Kaepernick's workout, where you had prominent members of the media who were in opposition to Colin Kaepernick, and it didn't seem like and a narrative was able to be spun about Colin Kaepernick that he didn't actually really want to play football. I think you it's been well known, made to you from me, that I think Stephen A. Smith was part of that. I think Stephen A. Smith was part of spinning a narrative that was anti-Colin Kaepernick. The NFL played this as well as any corporation ever could have. And I think almost to a degree that even Cap and them aren't on it as much as they are. I think that they've put that away. They've moved on. They're doing television. They're doing book stuff. They're doing other stuff in the media. So
settled.
Right. So I know. Well, he had settled even before then. But even after settling with the NFL based around, it was a work dispute, right? So even after settling the work dispute, Colin Kaepernick was still trying to get back into the league, still being very critical of the league. And that's the situation. I think the casualty in all of this is actually not Colin Kaepernick. The casualty in the culture essentially losing, not the culture, the casualty in a portion of the culture, because I can't speak for all Black people, losing this war with the NFL is Eric Reid. Because Colin Kaepernick, in his situation, not making an NFL team or not getting back on the NFL team, there were things that they could do to explain why. They could say, hey, Cap's game had fell off. Hey, Cap had some injuries. Cap's arm wasn't feeling good. All kinds of things like that. Eric Reid actually got re-signed, went on to have a fantastic season in Carolina, and for no good reason, in a league with terrible defenses all over the place, Eric Reid remains unsigned and not in the NFL. When he had always been an amazing player, a really good, productive player in the NFL. And the fact that we're not having a conversation about this anymore, the fact that we now have a largely Black NFL halftime show that's going to be reflective of a culture and a musical movement that is in lockstep with Black America, means that people are going to largely forget about what Eric Reid is going through right now and what has been happening to Eric Reid. We all know about Cap, but people are going to turn the page, and that's what happens. And I think the way Rihanna answered that question, I think that's kind of how a lot of us feel. I think the pandemic beat us down, and when NFL football came back, I could speak for myself, I didn't have the wherewithal to turn it off after having been in my house for so long and watching the same shit and not actually feeling like I was normal anymore. It made me feel normal again. I think all of those things mattered. But when I saw the first thing, I thought, this is the NFL spiking the football. They won this situation. They came out on top. And while Cap has a lot of stuff going on, my thoughts drifted to Eric Reed. And if you guys don't know who Eric Reed is, Eric Reed was a safety for the San Francisco 49ers, who had gone to, just to let you guys know, who had gone to LSU, was a great player for us, but then went on to become a really good player in the NFL, who also couldn't find a job in the league after kneeling and sticking with Cap this entire time, got signed to Carolina, played the whole year, started the whole year, had a really great season, and then couldn't work his way back into the NFL for no good reason in his athletic prime. So I thought about him, and I thought about the fact that this is probably over.
It's definitely over. But let me ask you this. Listening to what you're saying, when you talk about Eric Reed being the biggest casualty, do you look at Kaepernick and feel like he needs to be speaking up more on his behalf? And the only reason I say that is because he was one of the first, he was either the first or this, there were two players that kept kneeling with Cap. I can't remember the other one. He was kneeling right beside him. And Cap ended up, you know, he had a collusion case. He settled. I don't know if he could have litigated it or if it would have gone to arbitration, but he ended up taking a settlement.
I think Eric Reed was part of that case as well, though.
Did he get a settlement as well?
I'm almost sure that he was.
So fine. He got a settlement as well, was able to go back and play in the league. Kaepernick did not. My question to you is, and you're right, Eric Reed had a fantastic year with the Panthers. He should have either been re-signed or should have gone. Cowboys definitely could have used him. Could have gone to be a part of somebody else's secondary. He wasn't. If he settled, that changes one of the things that I was going to say. But my thing is,
he did. What? By the way, I just looked it up. Eric Reed definitely was a part of the collusion.
So that takes away one of the things I was going to say about collusion. Yeah. But what do you think people should still be doing? And if they shouldn't be watching the NFL, what are they waiting for the NFL? And it's a legitimate question. What are you wanting to see the NFL do? Cap settled. Eric Reed settled. Basically them admitting that there was some type of collusion against those two players. What do you want to see done?
So here's the thing. And the answer is, it's a very small thing for me. Solving the problems of the NFL social issues, it's a big problem to solve, right? It's a gigantic problem to solve. And I don't know how you solve it. You have 32 owners in the NFL, of most of them with at least what I consider to be dubious political affiliations. Most of them seem to be squarely on one side of the political aisle. I'm not speaking for all of the guys, but that seems clear after what we've seen from the league. So what a win is against the NFL, the answer to the question is, I don't know. What would have made me feel better about the league would have been Colin Kaepernick and Eric Reed being able to do what it is that they've been doing since they were kids, which is playing football. Now, I've spoken to Colin Kaepernick about this in the past, and when you talk to him about it directly, it's very powerful because he talks about the fact they've been playing football since he was 7 years old. It's not just a game. It's his life's work, and we have to remember that about a lot of the guys in the NFL. He's highly competitive guys that their life revolved around one thing. The reality is I failed Eric Reed. I feel like a lot of people in the culture failed Eric Reed. Cap, I'm not speaking for right now. I'm not even speaking for Eric Reed. The reason why I'm putting Cap in a separate thing is Colin Kaepernick is going on to define himself in different ways. I'm sure he still wants to be on that football field, but he's got a Netflix show coming out this year. He's going on to define him this month, actually. He's going on to define himself in different ways. Eric Reed's a football player. He's been a football player. He's always comported himself as a football player who works hard, who competes at the highest level, who sacrifices, who's willing to go and make plays and be a great teammate and do all of these things. Eric Reed's life, his football life, was destroyed for being a great teammate. One thing in football that they preach. I look at myself. I feel down on myself. I feel down on a lot of people. I'm disappointed in me. I'm disappointed in a lot of people. We failed Eric Reed. Eric Reed is still somewhere right now waiting for a call to be in the NFL. And it's a call that should have been made a long time ago, and it's only been made because of one reason. So when I looked at the lineup for the Super Bowl, I thought, why haven't I heard Eric Reed's name lately? Where is he at?
Do you think Cap has any responsibility to help out Eric? Because he's doing a lot of stuff outside. And I get what you're saying about your argument about how football is his life's work. That makes total sense. And I'm sure he misses it because that's what he's known for such a long time. And he never thought that his career would be cut short, especially for this reason. If there
he's
was
29.
A reason, it wasn't this. Right.
Yeah. Eric Reed's 29
never,
years old.
He never thought it would be. But Eric made a decision to stand by Cap, to kneel with Cap, and was motivated in the change that he was trying to bring about, or the awareness and the recognition. And they both, you know, have their cases. They settled their cases. They got some type of payout, but they have been casualties because of this, because they can't do what they love, what you're saying. My thing is, Cap is going on to do so many other things. To my knowledge, I don't know if Eric Reed is doing things of that nature. Do you feel like Cap has some sort of responsibility to help out his brother, to stand by his brother who stood by him?
Well, so the only reason why that question is hard to answer is because I don't know what he is doing. Do I think he has a responsibility? Yes, without a doubt. Like, yeah, it's Cap and Eric for life now. Cap, Eric, and Nessa for life now. Once somebody's been down with you like that, you got to stay down with them forever. They put their whole life, put his career on the line, being a great teammate for his brother. Mm-hmm. And not just being a great teammate for his brother, being a great teammate, but also these are also things that Eric Reed believes in and feels very strongly about as well, right? So, yes, of course I do. If there was something where there was distance between them or something was going on, I would feel unbelievably disappointed by that. But I can't say that that's not happening. I don't know. I don't know the inner workings of the company. I don't know what Eric Reed has lined up outside of the football field. But what I do know is at 29, playing the position that he plays, having had the kind of productivity that he's had in his NFL career, watch the Super Bowl halftime show this year. Watch all the games. But think about the black man right now who's sitting at home, not doing what he was born to do, what he sacrificed his health, his life, and a lot of his time to do simply because he stood up for you. Just, if we don't have the wherewithal, and I'm throwing myself in this too, if we don't have the wherewithal to keep it up, to put pressure on the NFL, at least let's not forget our brothers. That's all I want to, and that's what I thought about when I thought about this. Oh, I want to update a case real quick. Police have arrested Ian McKenzie Cranston at his home in Redmond on Thursday evening. We talked about this. Extra charges were put on Ian McKenzie Cranston in the killing of Barry Washington Jr. Thursday evening, an indictment came back, 6 charges: second degree murder, first degree manslaughter, second degree manslaughter, first degree assault with assault, and 2 counts of unlawful use of a deadly weapon. So we appreciate everybody who shared that story, and we'll be watching it. We told you we keep an eye on it. So Barry Washington Jr., the man that was killed up in Oregon, the guy was initially charged with something and let out on bail. New charges came in, and he has now been apprehended and arrested in shooting that guy in cold blood. All right. So white women have Denzel Washington on the run. Your
stretch.
Your pal earlier, Katie Kirk, she said she was scared of Denzel too. She was on the podcast. A podcast is where you go to fuck over Denzel Washington. She said, she was asked, as an interviewer, have you ever left an interview where it'd be with a president or an actor or something where you felt like they bamboozled you a little bit? And she took it upon herself to get off her chest about Denzel. She said that she left an interview shaken after she felt like Denzel came for her a little too hard. She was asking Denzel questions, and Denzel was coming back and being super duper hardcore in her answers. She asked Denzel if he was an actor. And Denzel said, no, I'm not an actor. An actor is what I do. I'm a human.
If you've ever interviewed Denzel, he's like that.
So, yes. And then she said after this, she left out shaking. She felt like he came at her in a way that was weirdly uncalled for. So I guess my question to you is this. Do you think that the white women put out an all staff email? Because we know that the white women have put out all staff emails before. Like when it was time to vote for Trump, they put one out and 53% of them voted for Trump. Do you feel like the white women put out an all staff email that was like, it's time to get Denzel. This nigga been doing too much.
No, I don't think that, even though I know you would love to believe that that's what's happening. Yeah. So she talks about this on Everything Iconic. Shout out to Danny Pellegrino. That's the homie. So she said this on his podcast, which
wait. This nigga's last name is Pellegrino.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is he at all responsible for the tasty, delicious water?
No, but he likes to pretend that he is, but he is not.
I love it.
Pellegrino. He gets asked that a lot. Katie Couric is problematic. Now, please, please go read the Page Six article. Somebody brought it to my attention and I thank them for it. This woman has a lot. She still feels bad. If you ever watched The Morning Show, I don't know if y'all watched that show, but we all know it's loosely based off of what went down at NBC and Matt Lauer. Is that how you say his last name?
Lauer. Matt Lauer. Yeah.
Lauer. Kyle Lowry. Matt Lauer. And Katie Couric. And when you watch it, we obviously know what went down to some degree with Matt, but with Katie, with Jennifer Aniston playing the Katie Couric figure, you're like, you think it's an exaggeration. It's not. I think that everything Jennifer Aniston does in this is Katie Couric. She does not take up for women. She is very self-centered. She feels sorry for herself and she admits that she feels sorry for Matt. This is in her book. Okay, so she's not, even in light of the Me Too movement, she's more mad that women didn't come and confide in her than she is with what Matt actually did. And she somewhat blames the women for putting themselves in these situations, very Sage Steele-ish, putting themselves in these situations because it never happened to her. And she never put herself. So Katie Couric saying this is absolutely ridiculous. If you interview Denzel, he's not an interview where... Like, he challenges you in interviews. I interviewed him. He asked me a question. And it was like, whoa, wait, who's doing the interview here? But I loved it. I had seen the movie. I had an opinion on it. He asked me about something that I said. I didn't feel shaken. I didn't feel any kind of way. I walked away thinking, wow, I had a great conversation with Denzel. Katie Couric doesn't like the fact that she was challenged. That's what that is. This is a man who challenged her about the question that she asked and wanted to make sure that she had it correct. They weren't going to cut and tape and slice it up any kind of way. He was going to make sure that you got it right.
So let me ask you a question. So it's the second week and it's Denzel against a white woman. Is it Denzel or is it the white women? Because two different stories about Denzel, it might lead some people out there to be like, hey, Denzel is a little aggressive. Maybe Denzel is a dick. Okay. But it also might lead people to believe that, because this is a story that's deeper than Denzel, deeper than Denzel, deeper than Ellen Pompeo, deeper than Katie Couric. Is there a perception? I mean, obviously there has to be. Are these women, because I watched some Tom Cruise interviews before I came, and nobody batters an interviewer like Tom Cruise. Like, no one fucks up an interviewer like Tom Cruise. No one. Do you think that in the case of Ellen and in Katie, that this is either Denzel versus them? Maybe Denzel's a little too harsh, or are we dealing with some maybe latent anti-blackness?
The only comparison between these two interviews is the fact that it was Denzel and versus a white woman. Mm. Because when you talk about these two interviews, Ellen Pompeo went at him. This right. isn't where she didn't walk away saying, I was scared and I felt shaken. She didn't fall into the, oh, I'm a poor little white girl. That's what Katie Couric is doing. Mm. So there's a difference. It's hard to compare the two and answer your question, because absolutely in the Katie Couric interview, she turned around and felt sorry for herself and wanted everybody else to feel sorry and played the victim. When I'm reading this transcript and I'm like, what's the problem?
Yeah.
He told you, don't call me an actor. I'm a human. That's what it's as if you said Denzel and he said, call me Mr. Washington. Are you gonna have a problem with that? Ellen was problematic in her interview, the fact that they both went at each other. I don't think it was deeply rooted in anything, which is what I said last podcast, but like he said, he came at her a certain way and she came back at him a certain way. This is different.
So this is the thing. We have to keep our eye out because in the coming weeks, seriously, because I'm looking at, does Gwyneth Paltrow have a Denzel story? Does fucking Haley Duff, the Duff sisters, have a Denzel story? Is it, for some reason, in this year of our Lord, 2021, have white women declared war on Denzel Washington? And why on earth, Katie Couric, would you ever think, y'all, I'm telling y'all, pick somebody else. I'm just letting y'all know. Yeah, pick somebody else. It's time. If it's time to get on somebody's ass, we'll deal with Denzel internally. We're not going to let y'all have. like, pick somebody else, man. It's people that we would love for y'all to get at, by the way. People that we would love to spank them. Like, we might be a little protective, but we'll let them go. But pick somebody else. All right, time for Van's very serious question of the week. It's actually two questions. The first question is, I'm sure that you hated the Trump administration and its reign of terror on America. Mm-hmm. You think that Trump administration ruined America, ruined the political discourse of the country. Do you think so?
It definitely put us in a, ruin's a harsh word. Yes, it put us, I'll just go on the side of ruin, sure.
Sure, it ruined it.
We're definitely worse off.
Worse off after the Trump administration, terrible for America, has really led to a heightening of the political polarization that we've seen. Here's the question.
Okay.
If it meant taking back the Trump presidency, would you be willing to wash out of the annals of history the Obama presidency?
This is a tough one.
So there's going to be no Trump. Let's say Hillary wins in 08. Whatever happens. There's going to be no Trump, right? No Trump coming along. Like, we're in a completely different spot. We had probably had somebody, because I don't think Donald Trump gets elected. Like, we're probably going to have, if Obama doesn't get elected, we're probably going to have somebody different to be over coronavirus.
Okay.
All of that. So no Trump. Would you be willing to get rid of the Obama, the Obama presidency too? You say no.
I almost said yes. I'm going to tell you why I said no. Trump didn't create these people that exist within this country that do the things they do and react a certain way.
You're right.
They already were here. And if anything, the Trump administration made those people feel comfortable enough to show their faces. They were always in our midst.
Right.
And so not having Obama, or not having Trump, I should say, in his administration, it wouldn't have changed necessarily the way we are as a country or the way people think. Mm-hmm. All he did was embolden them. Mm. And I'd rather know who it is that I'm looking at, i.e. Hulk Hogan, than somebody pretending to be something that they're not. Because now I know how to deal with you. And I also don't think that we would be having certain conversations the way that, you know, we have over the last 2 years, have been comfortable enough or to do those things had there not been a Trump administration. We would have still pretended like things were okay and believe in the American dream and, you know, I don't see color and all those problematic things. So, nope, I say keep Trump.
I'm going to say I would be willing to get rid of the Obama presidency to get rid of the Trump president.
You voted him off in one of your other serious questions. I know where your loyalty lies.
I'm going to say yeah. Because I look at it as a black man. I don't really feel like I got much from the Obama presidency. I would be real with you. I think Obama is one of the most important figures in American history. He's very important to black people too. But I feel like his public service would have been just as dynamic, maybe even more dynamic, as a senator. And the reality is this, is I really feel like, and I don't mean to scare anybody, I really feel like the Trump presidency is a harbinger for the beginning of the end of the union. I don't think we can come back from this. I really don't think we can come back from this. And I think, you know, I don't know. I just, if there were more, if I felt like I had gained more, and this is not saying Barack Obama didn't do a lot of stuff for America, but the stuff that he did was, I guess what I'd say, largely not really directed at Black Americans. Like, I give him credit for writing the ship on the economy and all of that stuff, but I feel like Hillary would have done that too. You know what I mean? So, I don't know. For me personally, Obama's kind of just another president, if I'm being for real.
You realize, though, my answer had nothing to do with because to keep Obama. It was what came out of
Trump. I get it. But this is why I thought about this very serious question, because I dreamed this.
Really? And what was the case in your dream? There was no Obama?
I dreamed that we lived in a world where Obama had never, I think the Marvel multiverse shit is getting to me. I dreamed I woke up in one morning and saw Obama trying to get a bill through the Senate. And I was like, why is Obama trying to get it? And he was a senator. And President Trump had never been president. And I was like concerned about my weight.
Okay.
So I'm telling you, I was playing basketball with a friend of mine from TMZ, and I was concerned about, they hadn't seen me in a while, and I was concerned about my weight. That was the whole dream. That's my head right there. All right.
As Riley from Boondock says, it's fun to dream sometimes.
It is. It's fun to dream. Okay. Take thinking caps off, but do not stop learning. That's all the higher learning we have for today. We're going to come back Tuesday. We have a good interview.
Tuesday? When do we do what do you mean?
Friday. Friday, we tape on Thursday. We have a interview drops on Friday. I am Valet the Junior.
I'm Rachel Lynn Lindsay.
We out.